Take your seats. The Senate Tax Committee will come to order. We have a couple of presentations here this morning, and I know that there are some folks present that might like to speak to some of the issues we're going to talk about. So, folks, if I can ask you to take your seats or take your conversations out into the hallway, please. First up, we have special taxing districts, and Jack Paulson is here to provide a brief overview for us. Mr. Paulson, thank you for being here. Before you begin, if I could, I asked our council members to look at a question regarding levy limits. Yesterday we had a presentation about the performance standards for local government, and those performance standards that were passed in 2010 created an incentive for local governments that participated in the performance standards with a financial incentive on their LGA payment, and also an exception to levy limits. And the question yesterday arose, what happens to those cities that do not receive LGA? Do they also get an exception from levy limits if they participate in the performance standard measures? And Mr. Sylvia has researched that question for us and has an answer for us this morning. Mr. Sylvia.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I did have a chance to look at that question, and the answer is yes. Cities that do not receive local government aid but do elect to participate in the standard performance measures are exempt from the levy limits if two things are present. First, if the levy limits are enacted currently right now, the levy limits have since expired. But if the levy limits are in place and a particular city has a population of 2,500 or more, then those cities that do not participate, that do not receive local government aid would, in fact, be exempt.
Thank you. And Mr. Sylvia and members, I don't think that we even considered that when we had our other conversation last year about the levy limits and the pitfalls of the levy limits and the number of exemptions that there are that make those levy limits mean so very little. And this is a huge exception. We saw yesterday that there were dozens of cities that are working through these performance standards, and because they are exempt from any levy limits if there were any in law. I don't think that we talked about that last year. And now it's not just the LGA cities, but it's also all non-LGA cities if they're over 2,500 and there are levy limits in place and they participate in these performance standards. So I think we should look at that. I've asked Senator Chamberlain maybe to look at that and come back and, you know, make a recommendation to the committee. How does that affect all that we've done, and where do we go from here? Senator Howe.
Thank you. Chair, I've got a question as concerning some of the cities that are in the study have HRAs and also have port authorities. And so by statute, they can also have levy limits on there. I'm just wondering how that impacts or what kind of controls we have for that variable.
Well, Senator Howe, you are in luck, because today we are going to be talking about those special taxing districts, so the timing is pretty good, and we can absolutely talk about that when we talk about the presentation here, whether levy limits apply to those special taxing districts or not. But
I know there's limits on there, but I'm just wondering how that variable is accounted for in the study.
We will get to that question.
Thank you.
I hope to bring it up when Mr. Paulson is done with his presentation. Senator Skoy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Because my memory gets worse as I get older, I know there was a, when we were talking about levy limits last year, there was a proposal that removed all of the levy limit exemption language from the statutes. Evidently that did not occur, and levy limits are just not in effect now, or did some of that levy limit statute exemption language get removed from the statutes? Does Mr. Silva know that? Evidently they're still there, because you just went and did research on them.
Mr. Sylvia, can you opine on that? Can you tell us?
Madam Chair and Senator, yes, the language is still in the statute. It's just that the levy limits have since expired. So it includes years 2009, 2010, 2011, but they've since expired, so they're no longer in place, but they are present.
Maybe, Madam Chair,
Senator Skoy,
if you have thoughts or some hearings on levy limits, maybe we should consider just removing all that language from the statute book, and then if people want to reinstitute levy limits, they start with a clean slate.
Senator Skoy, I think that makes sense. There are so many different exemptions for levy limits. They aren't in place now. If we're going to put them in place again at some point, they should be meaningful. And so if we're going to have the conversation, let's have it without having to try to understand all the exemptions. I think it makes sense, and maybe you want to work with Senator Chamberlain to introduce a proposal here in the committee to do exactly that, to take out all of the different exemptions to the extent, and then we can put in place whatever exemptions, if we want to, should apply in the event that levy limits are reinstituted. But right now, it's just shocking how many exceptions and exemptions there are. Senator Scott?
Yeah.
Senator Daley, did you want to comment about levy limits? Thank you, members. Then to Mr. Paulson, thank you for being here this morning.
Madam Chair, members, thank you. For the record, my name is Jack Paulson, and I'm an analyst with Senate Council on Research. The topic today is special taxing districts. It's a broad topic covering many areas of the law and many different types of districts. My plan is to try to focus on the tax levy aspect of the special taxing districts, but of course members are free to ask questions on any aspect. I have asked some representatives of some of the different districts to be available to answer questions, and the watershed districts, the Metropolitan Council, at least have provided information that's in your packets that's available for you. I won't necessarily go over it, but they may refer to it if they have questions. So I guess the first question to deal with is, what is a special taxing district? There is actually a definition in current statute, 275.066, and it includes the following entities, and it goes through a list of 25 different types of entities that are considered special taxing districts. I'll just briefly mention, and it also gives the where they're located in the statutes. Watershed districts, sanitary and sanitary sewer districts, public library, railroad authorities, hospital districts, there are two local transit authorities, regional development commissions, housing and redevelopment authorities, normally referred to as HRAs, port authorities, and economic development authorities. Then the three large metropolitan special taxing districts, the Metropolitan Council. The Metropolitan Airports Commission does actually have levy authority. It hasn't been exercised since 1969, so I did not deal with that, but they do have levy authority. They do have a levy limit. And the Metropolitan Mosquito Control Commission. There are some other local special taxing districts. I should mention that many of the special taxing districts are organized under general law and statutes, but there are a number of them that are under special law. And a couple other groups are the Emergency Medical Services Special Taxing Districts and Airport Authorities. There are two or three of those. And number 26 just says, any other political subdivision of the state, excluding county, school districts, cities, and towns, that has power to adopt and certify a property tax levy to the county auditor as determined by the Commissioner of Revenue. And if you look at the list, you know, this definition 26 is drawing a distinction between the general purpose, counties, cities, and towns in particular, school districts, I guess you could say maybe they are a special purpose of education. But in contrast to the general purpose local governments, the special taxing districts are dedicated to a specific purpose, and they've been granted a taxing authority by state law. There are special districts that are not taxing districts, do not have taxing authority. There's a number of those. I'm not going into that unless somebody wants to go into that. I thought it might be useful to look at an example of a special taxing district. This happens to be the Minnehaha Creek Watershed District, and it runs east and west across Hennepin County and takes in the northern part of Carver County, northeastern part of Carver County. And basically, the watershed districts are set up in the boundaries are set up with the way the water flows. It has not necessarily anything to do with the way that county lines, school districts, city town lines are set up. And so what you find is that special taxing districts cross other local government boundaries, and in the process, when they levy taxes, you end up with multiple taxing jurisdictions or taxing areas within a particular city or town. And this, I thought it might be helpful. I don't know if we've talked in detail about that in committee. This is an illustration that Mr. Nord did for the property tax working group. and you have it in your packets. And basically, it's just taking, calling it Spruce County, split between two school districts, A and B. Adding to that Cold Creek watershed, and then within that, a city he's calling Mill City. And so you can see the way the watershed district crosses the school district lines and then also crosses the city lines. And to further complicate things, within Mill City, he's added a downtown economic development authority. So just within Mill City, you can see how it splits into five different unique taxing areas, as we refer to them. The county rate is the same in all, Spruce County. The city rate is the same throughout the city. But two of the districts are in School District A, three are in School District B. The Cold Creek watershed is in two, the downtown EDA. And so you can see that you have five different total tax rates within this one city. That's a complication of the way special taxing districts cross boundaries. I just wanted to bring that up because I'm going to be referring to unique taxing areas as I go through the presentation a couple of times, and I thought it might be helpful just to have some background what I was referring to there.
Mr. Paulson, can you just confirm for us where we are at with whether or not these special taxing districts have some kind of notice requirement on the county's property tax statement and whether or not the county boards approve these levies? I know that Senator Roebling had a bill on this a couple of years ago, and she's interested members in bringing it back because these special taxing districts, as far as I know, do not have a line item on the property tax statements, which would mean the transparency and the accountability of the folks that pay these taxes. So can you just confirm or just let us know what happens with the taxing authority? What is the oversight? Does the county board or some other entity review the taxation decisions before they get implemented?
Madam Chair, as far as Senator Roebling's bill, I will actually be discussing that later on in the presentation toward the end. As far as oversight, that could be somewhat variable, but I'll try to get into that a little bit as we go along.
But there is no line item for many of these special taxing districts on a county property tax statement, correct?
Madam Chair, in general, no. The metropolitan special taxing districts have a line. It's the total of the metropolitan special taxing districts under current law, and the regional rail authorities are shown up underneath the county. So those are the two. The rest are just in other special taxing districts.
I think it's important to have that context as we talk about this through the rest of your presentations. Thank you, Mr. Paulson. Go ahead.
Madam Chair.
Senator Squid.
To that point, if you go into your packet and grab Spruce County, I think some of these are listed out, but it depends on the jurisdiction.
I guess I can skip ahead to that if members would like.
If you want, why don't you go ahead and skip ahead to that point, and then we'll come back to the rest of your presentation.
Okay, Madam Chair. Unfortunately, Madam Chair, I put in two statements. One says 2011 current law, and unfortunately when I wrote that on there, I copied it wrong, and so it was actually the proposed. So there's now being handed out an actual mock-up of or an actual statement for 2012, and that shows that is the current law statement. You can see on here that if you go down to about the middle of the page, property tax by jurisdiction, it shows the state general tax, the county, city or town, and school district split out between voter approved and other. Line 10 is actually the special taxing districts, and there's a line for the metropolitan special taxing districts, which would be the Metropolitan Council and the Mosquito Control District. And then there's a separate line B, for other special taxing districts. So that's a total line, and it can include a number of districts. There are certain unique taxing areas where there can be up to nine special taxing districts, although that includes the metropolitan one. So there can be like six or so additional ones. If you turn then to this page, 2011 property tax statement that's labeled Senate File 787, that's a mock-up that the department did for a proposal like Senator Roebling's that's currently in the committee. And what they've done, rather than having the line just go all the way across, here it's gone to two columns. And so on the left side, you've got lines 6 through 9, the county, city, town, and so forth. And then on the right side, under special taxing districts, line 10, you've got broken out Met Council, Metro Mosquito Control, Regional Transit Board, which is the transit debt levy, Regional Park District, Regional Railroad, HRA, Museum, County HRA, and Water Shed Management Organization. This would be an example like for Hennepin County, where I think there's nine lines here, and the most that any unique taxing area has is nine lines. Kind of skipping back a little bit, you know, on average, the special taxing district levies comprise about roughly 5% of the total, although that does vary. So it's a question, you know, this gives you the full disclosure for all of the districts, and it's a judgment call whether this is an approach to take under current law. You know, the Metropolitan Council in particular is a large special taxing district. It's shown separately, but the rest are just combined together, and you really don't see the individual districts. The department, I guess, has expressed some concern in the counties, some concern about is this more challenging for taxpayers to deal with in a two-column form like this? I guess that's a question to consider, and also some administrative cost of breaking out all these individual special taxing districts. They could address that more, I guess, if they wanted to, but they have expressed some concerns about possible issues with computer programming concern about our taxpayers going to get lost in the lines, basically.
Mr. Paulson, that Carver County has said it wouldn't really cost any more to do it this way, to break it all out. They've said that. I don't know what the other counties might think about that, but I guess what I'm getting at is not just the transparency, but these special taxing districts, folks don't know that these organizations can pass tax levies, and residents don't really know how to weigh in on those decisions. And if the county board or the city or the other authorities aren't weighing in on these decisions, then there's no accountability. That's my concern, and I'm not sure how we address that, because it is complicated that you've got these districts that cross jurisdictions. So if you've got a watershed district members that covers Carver and Hennepin County, is it the Hennepin County Board that reviews it, or is it the Carver County Board that reviews it? And you might get very different results. So I'm not sure how you might deal with that, but I do think that at least the least we can do is create the transparency so residents know what they're paying taxes for, even if you can't get the oversight from some other elected body. Mr. Paulson, on that?
Madam Chair, this would be one approach. This would actually put it on the property tax statement that taxpayers receive in March. Mr. Nord from the Property Tax Division also took another approach that he presented to the Property Tax Working Group, and that particular is in your packets also. It's labeled 2013, and this is proposed property tax, the statement that taxpayers get earlier in the year.
Mr. Paulson, I'm not seeing that. Can you just...
Yeah, it's a letter size. It's labeled 2013 proposed property tax. And once again, I wrote on their current law and proposed. There is no, that I'm aware of, actual legislative proposal at this point that would do this. But, you know, the truth in taxation of the proposed notices is a way that taxpayers are given information notice so that they can weigh in with their okay. Apparently we had a copying issue again, but I'm sorry. Apparently current law is the only one that's in the packets, and the proposed will be coming shortly. So on the proposed notice that you get earlier in the process, taxpayers get notice of the tax payable to the county, the city, school district, and so forth, Metropolitan Council, and a meeting date and location for the budget meeting where there can be public input. That's not currently for the other special taxing districts. And Mr. Nord put together a proposal that in which the other special taxing districts would be listed on the notice of proposed property tax. That could be done together with or separately from doing it on the property tax statement, the final statement that people receive in March. There is a potential issue. You know, under current law, the Metropolitan Council and the Metropolitan districts are required to have the budget meeting, but the other special taxing districts are not. So, and in some areas, you only have maybe a couple of special taxing districts, but in some areas you might have six or seven, and how to coordinate all those budget meetings would be an issue that would have to be worked out because if you have your watershed and county park or whatever on meeting at the same time, you'd have to choose. And it would be a lot of dates to try and work out into the current truth and taxation process. Not to say it can't be done, but that would be an issue that we need to consider if they were all going to be required to have meetings. So,
Mr. Paulson, I think you make a really good point that if we're going to include all of these special taxing districts on the property tax statement for transparency, then it makes sense that we also include them in the truth and taxation notice so folks can do something about it before the tax gets implemented. I mean, I think that's pretty logical. I know that those truth and taxation hearings are you never know what's going to happen there. And I know that it's a struggle to get them all scheduled. Sometimes people show up, sometimes they don't. And so maybe folks can coordinate that on behalf of the residents. I'd like to see that. But I think if we're going to change the property tax statement members, it only makes sense to include that same information in the truth and taxation notice so folks can do something before it gets imposed against them. I know that there are members of watershed districts that have been frustrated in the past that there's just no way to engage the public in some of the decision making that they engage in, and maybe this is one of the ways to do it. So, Mr. Paulson, please proceed.
Madam Chair, that's the case, and whether maybe we wouldn't have to provide budget meetings for all the districts, maybe just contact information if taxpayers want more information, that might be an option. So, something to consider. Last thing on the tax statements. In the 2010 omnibus tax bill, we did include a provision that Senate language required special taxing district levies to be stated separately if a district had exceeded 25% of the total of all special taxing district levies on the statement. So that's potentially an option that could be considered once again. It was not adopted.
Thank you, Mr. Paulson. Please proceed.
Moving back a little bit, just going over the number of special taxing districts. As I mentioned, the definition, the Commissioner of Revenue has authority, can determine whether or not a special taxing district has levy authority. And they actually issue a code for each levy, each special taxing district. It's a little tricky, but I went through the list that they have, and I came up with a total of 310 special taxing districts. But they don't all levy in any given year. Of those, 225 levied property taxes in 2012. And just going through the list, the watershed districts and the watershed maintenance organizations in the metro area, a total of 61, of which 46 are actually watershed districts, 54 levied property taxes of $50.6 million in 2012. HRAs is the most numerous. There's 122 HRA districts and 81 levied property taxes of $43 million. Combined EDAs and port authorities, 44 total, 29 levying property taxes of 9.7. Hospital districts, 13 levied property taxes of 6.9. Skipping down a little bit to the regional rail authorities, there are 13 of them, of which 11 levied property taxes of $46.4 million. Thanks. The metropolitan districts are the largest. Met Council and Metropolitan Mosquito Control District levy a total of $93.7 million together. The miscellaneous districts, that's things like the Three Rivers Park District, which levies around $40 million, and then the Park Museum Fund is about $11 million. So that adds up to a total of about $313 million in terms of certified property tax levy for payable 2012. For reference, I went to back to 1996 and looked at the percent that special taxing district levies are of all property tax levies. It's grown somewhat. It was about 3.11% in 1996. It's now about 3.7%. So the levies have grown as a share, not necessarily dramatically, I guess.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Skoy.
Mr. Paulson, do you have on that last graph, do you have any idea what the total property tax dollar amount has done from 96 to 2011, or is that not off the top of your head?
Mr. Paulson.
Mr. Chair, Senator Skoy, I do, actually. This is in terms of spread levy, so it's not certified levy. In payable 1996, the special taxing district levy was about $121 million out of a total of $3.9 billion, 3.11%. For payable 2011, the spread levy for special districts was about $279 million. Total spread levy, $7.5 billion for 3.7%. So that's...
And Mr. Chair, so the total property tax went from 3-something to 7.9-something. Did I hear that?
3.9 to 7.5.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, this is, I showed the chart showing that on average it's about 3.5% to 4% of the total spread levy. But there is actually a distribution. If you look at the various special taxing, the various unique taxing areas, there are about 8% of the UTAs, as we refer to them, have no special taxing district levy at all. And the then they have ranges. About half of them, the levy as a percent of the total is between 0 and 2%. 13% between 2 and 4, 17% between 4 and 8. There are some districts where the special taxing district levy is over 8%, some even over 12% in a few cases. I tried to look at what was driving that. A couple of different things. If you get into the very high special taxing district levy as a percent of the total, what I found is generally in townships where there's a relatively small township levy and in a lot of cases very little or very relatively small school district levy. And so it's just that it wasn't necessarily that the special taxing district levy was huge. It was more that the other local governments were smaller. It's not always the case, though. In some areas, the sanitary district, I found in some of the lakes areas, county HRA, hospital district, it was a variety of special taxing district levies that in some cases drove that percentage up. So, I'll run through the the major groupings of special taxing districts. Just the citation, the general purpose is often noted in the statutes, governing body, the area, and certified levy. The HRA, EDAs, and port authorities I'm treating together here, they're all in Chapter 469. Particularly for the HRAs, provide a sufficient supply of adequate, safe, and sanitary dwellings, remedy a shortage of housing. When you're dealing with EDAs and port authorities, also to some extent HRAs, it's for redeveloping blighted areas, develop economic and industrial development districts. The governing body is generally up to seven commissioners appointed by the mayor and city council or the county board. It must be residents of the area, maybe members of the city council or county board. And as it works out, very often the city council or the county board also functions as the HRA board. The area they operate is within the city or the county. There are a couple of multiple county districts, and their levy was $52.9 million. Combined the HRAs, EDAs, and port authorities. This is a chart just showing the nominal levy increase for the HRA, EDA, and inflation adjusted is the dashed line. I don't know about the HRA so much. In some cases, particularly when I get to regional rail authorities, some of what's going on is that there may be very few districts levying back a number of years, and you know isn't necessarily the case that the same districts are levying a lot more. You can have more districts contributing to the levy. Watershed districts, watershed maintenance organizations in the metropolitan area, chapters 103D and 103B, they control and alleviate flooding, drainage, regulate flow of streams. 3 to 9 managers appointed by the county board or the city council in the case of a WMO, not public officers. It can include one or more watersheds or counties, total levy of $50.6 million. That's the chart on those. Regional rail authorities, Chapter 398A, provide for preservation and improvement of local rail service, preservation of abandoned railroad right-of-way for future transportation uses, not less than 5 commissioners appointed by the county board, covers the county, the certified levy is $46.4 million. This is one I'll just point out that in 1998, I believe there were 4 regional rail authorities that levied less than $1 million each. And, of course, now there are 11 levying in 2012. There's a drop there. 2 of the regional rail authorities, larger ones, dropped their levies in that 1 year, 2009, and then one of them went back up again. So that's why you see that valley there. Hospital districts, Chapter 447, to acquire and approve and run hospital and nursing home facilities that the hospital board decides are necessary and expedient. The board is elected from each city and town in the district, and one member elected at large. And it's 2 or more cities or towns that form the district. The levy was $6.9 million. Also going to mention emergency services districts, ambulance services, first responder, communications equipment. They're joined and they governing bodies, representatives of each participating political subdivision, can be 2 or more counties, cities, or towns. Smaller levy, $2.3 million. I combined those on this chart. Metropolitan Council, Chapter 473, does planning for orderly development of the metropolitan area and plan for and operate regional wastewater treatment system and the metropolitan transit system. Governing body is 17 members from the metropolitan area appointed by the governor. It's within the 7-county metropolitan area. The certified 2012 levy is $76.9 million. I guess I mentioned that's the biggest of the special taxing districts. The council levy is prior to 2001, there was an operating levy for transit. on the property tax. In 2001, the state took that over at the same time that we took over the general education levy, and so you see a big drop from payable 2001 to payable 2002, relatively flat to actually declining in real terms. It looks like I lost my inflation-adjusted label there. Mosquito control district is also chapter 473, control mosquitoes and gnats. 18 commissioners appointed by the county board, members of the metropolitan counties within the seven county area. $16.7 million was the levy. It's actually relatively flat. I guess one thing I'll mention is that as you get to these later years, 2010, 11, and 12, you tend to see these levies flattening out, and that maybe, and I'm not sure about the mosquito control district specifically, but in a number of these districts, their levy limit is set based on market value, and market values have been flat to declining, so that would also tend to restrict the levies in some cases of these districts. And again, I'm not sure if that's the case with this one specifically. Three Rivers Park District. This is a special law, 1985, Chapter 14, acquire and maintain parks, wildlife sanctuaries, etc. Seven commissioners, two appointed by the county board, five were elected. As taxing authority on Hennepin County property within the district, and the levy was $40.3 million for 2012.
Mr. Chair. Senator Marty.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Paulson. It says two are appointed by the Hennepin County Board, five elected. And are they only? Do they only have taxing authority in Hennepin County? Because I mean, I think it stretches into some of Ramsey and Carver, Scott. Do they not have taxing authority in those other county portions of the district?
Mr. Chair, Senator Marty, they do not. That's the Three Rivers Park District levy. Park Museum Fund is in Chapter 450 to maintain and improve museum and exhibits, the Minneapolis Institute of Arts. The governing body is Minneapolis Park Board, six commissioners, all are elected. Taxing authority on Hennepin County property, and they certified $11.2 million for taxes payable in 2012. This is just an overview of levy authority and limits. It gives the statutory citation for each group of special taxing districts. The watershed districts, there are various limits there are limits on each fund and for a period of years, so I didn't try to list all those. I can provide more information if members would like.
Senator Scoy.
Thank you. Mr. Paulson, on the levy authority, some of these taxing districts are, their levy authority is set, as you mentioned, by the market value of the jurisdiction. Is this value exclusion that was enacted last year causing a problem in that valuation and their levies?
Mr. Paulson. Chair and Senator Scoy, that's a very good question. The department last year administered the levy limit in such a way if they're, say, the HRA is 0.0185% of taxable market value, it's my understanding that the homestead market value exclusion was taken into account in the definition of taxable market value. There are a great many levy authorizations and limits, and some of them specify estimated market value or just market value. Some of them say specifically taxable market value. And so some of us, legislative staff and some local folks, have been working on a proposal that would clarify it one way or another, which way the legislature wants to go. And so that's I guess I'll just say that will be coming as far as I know. I don't believe it's been introduced yet. But, yes, that is an issue. HRA districts, 0.0185% of taxable market value. EDAs and port authorities very close at 0.018 813. Hospital districts, it's just the amount necessary. Regional development commissions, the amounts are specified. They're indexed for inflation. Sewer districts, about necessary. Regional rails, 0.04835% of taxable market value. Emergency services districts, the lesser of 0.048% or 400,000. Transportation districts, it's different from St. Cloud and Duluth, their districts. Metropolitan Council is indexed for inflation, and the Mosquito Control District is indexed for market value. And the Hennepin County Park District is 0.03224% of taxable market value. This is actually the chart that I was going to use to lead into the discussion of the property tax statements and the truth in taxation statements. Just a question of, as I mentioned before, about 8% of unique taxing areas do not have a special taxing district levying in that area. About a third have one special taxing district levying. You do get all the way up to 9 in Hennepin County. That the 9 actually breaks out the transit debt from the other Metropolitan Council levies, but in some cases you do have where that demonstration shows 9 different districts broken out. You do find that in some areas, primarily in Hennepin County, because you have the park, the Three Rivers Park District, the Park Museum levy, Watershed District, and so forth. So it gets to be a relatively large number of districts in a lot of, particularly in the metropolitan area, Hennepin County particularly, because of those specific levies. And that brings me back to the property tax statement. So I guess that's all I have, unless there are questions.
Senator Chamberlain.
Mr. Paulson, I just wanted to confirm something. In here, a little earlier, Senator Scoy had asked about total property tax levy. I just want to confirm, so from the late 90s until current, we went from $3.5 billion roughly to $3.7 or $9 to roughly $7.5 billion total property tax levy. Was that correct?
I could give you, I can get you the exact figure, Senator Chamberlain, yeah. Mr. Chair and Senator Chamberlain. Yeah,
but that was a total property tax levy. It'd be city, county, special, STDs, all that, right?
Mr. Chair, Senator Chamberlain, yes. Right. Of course, there's a state levy. I did not include, I believe, the tax increment and the fiscal disparities levies, okay, which are different pools.
Right, right.
So, but yeah, I can get you those numbers.
Mr. Chair, one follow-up.
Senator Chamberlain.
And you got a pretty colorful chart here. This here, does that look familiar? It's a nice chart. I mean, I like
Mr. Chair and Senator Chamberlain, that's actually supplied by the Metropolitan Council. And
okay,
if members, they're here to answer questions. If
right, okay,
people have questions, that's their information.
Okay. You haven't seen this or looked at this one?
Mr. Chair, I have seen it. I didn't go
okay
through and try to
verify. I won't hold you to that. But the point was that we went up from about 3.7 to 7.5 billion in that, you know, 12, 13-year period from late 90s to 2011. That's correct.
Mr. Chair,
I just want to make sure I got this number right, that we did increase property taxes, that property taxes at the local level did increase during that period of time.
The numbers that I used were from taxes payable in 1996, $3.9 billion,
okay,
to taxes payable in 2011, $7.5 billion.
Okay, so in spite of what we have done over the last 12, 13 years, local property taxes have still increased substantially during that time.
Mr. Paulson.
Mr. Chair and Senator Chamberlain, yes, that's true. Whether you know, those are not adjusted for inflation,
right,
those
yeah
are nominal numbers. So,
okay. All right. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Members, any further questions for Mr. Paulson? Mr. Paulson, anything further for us?
Mr. Chair, no. I hope it's been helpful.
Thank you. Thank you for your work and presentation, Mr. Paulson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Madam Chair, we're now at the midway point here, and we'll have Mr. Naumann set up.
Good
matter.
Members, in the meantime, I know there are some folks here that may have wanted to talk about special taxing districts. I think Kathy Connie, if she's here, or was there somebody here that wanted to speak directly to special taxing districts to the committee while they're setting up here?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Ray Bone. I'm here representing the Minnesota Association of Watershed Districts. I'd just like to clarify a few things, especially as it relates to the tax, the property tax statement and the truth in taxation statement. Evidently, from what I've been able to learn from my districts is that it varies literally from county to county. We have some counties that don't put it on. We have other counties that do. Some counties we are in the truth in taxation, we are on the truth in taxation statement, and other counties we are not. We have absolutely no problem. In fact, would welcome being on a revised statement, any kind of truth of taxation statement, any kind of transparency that we can bring to our process. We're more than willing to be supportive of. And as you probably all know, we do have the public hearings. We do try to get the word out on those and publicize those. And there are several other methods that we also use to try to get the word out to the public. What I'd like to do is I'd like to introduce Brian Johnson, who's with the South Washington Watershed District, and have him talk about the process we use or that they use specifically in budgeting for the next year. Brian?
Well, welcome to the committee. Please be brief.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair and other members of the committee. I'm Brian Johnson. I'm from the South Washington Watershed District, which is in Washington County. And our process, we try to be as open as we possibly can. We will start early in the year, maybe as early as March, talking about our levy for the next year. And our levy is divided into two pieces. One is the administration part, which works out to be about, on average, $14 a year on a $200,000 investment, so it's pretty minimal. In addition, we have divided our watershed into three subparts, and the rest of our levy is based on projects that happen within that watershed. And these are always done with cooperation with the county and the city. All of our projects are multifaceted, meaning each one has a piece in it. That levy works out to about $50 a year on a general average. Across, that is, again, on a $200,000 thing. We will start that out. If we have a major change, we go to the cities that are involved and we say, look, this, and a major change may be $30 a year on a tax statement, and we will go to that city and say, this is what's going to happen, this is what we're thinking about, what do you think? We'll go through our entire process. We have open meetings where we have we invite every meeting, we invite the general constituents to come to that meeting. We also have our we have regularly announced meetings for our meetings so that they can review our taxing bill. All of our money that we have is all on the truth and lending piece on the Washington County truth and lending taxation statement. So it's all right forward. Once we finish all of our taxing reviews and we look at it as the total amount that is on each house, and we say, has this increased? And we do our best to decrease it every year, and we have done that. And the purpose there is that we want to keep our levy and the amount of taxes as low and consistent as possible. That then is reviewed brought to the county. They do look at it for all of the watersheds within Washington County. The Washington County Board does go look at it in the end of the year. Do they approve it? The answer is no, but they do review it, and they do ask us embarrassing questions if they do increase. So we do have oversight. We have it not only with the citizens, we have it with the cities, and we have it with the counties.
Mr. Johnson, thank you. I know that one of the challenges is just to get folks to come to your public meetings. I know that. And perhaps having those truth in lending statements, maybe they are included in Washington County, but they aren't included in all counties. And so maybe what your practice is what might be best for the statutes. I've asked Senator Hoffman to work on on this issue, and you may want to work with her. I encourage you to do that, to figure out how best to do this statewide. So thank you for your testimony. Thanks for stopping up today. Appreciate it very much.
Madam Chair.
Senator Scoyne.
Just a question for Mr. Johnson. Are you appointed by that county board?
Senator and Madam Chair, the answer is yes. I am appointed by the county board. In fact, I met with my county commissioner on Monday this week. We meet on a regular basis. And in addition to that, our board is a little bit unique in the sense that the cities, and in fact all of the metro area ones are set up this way, where the cities have to give a list to the county board as of people they approve. So the city councils say give a list of at least three people, and from that list, that's who the county commissioners are chosen, or the commissioner choose that person. And so that if we do things that are not liking to the city and to the county, we're removed. It's really simple. In fact, my position about 6 years ago, the person in front of me was removed because he annoyed the city.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. Senator Howell.
Madam Chair, just a question for the testifier. On there is a difference between a levy and also an assessment, where a county ditch clean out or something like that, where you're assessing a property. Is there not a difference on that?
Mr. Johnson.
Senator Howell, Madam Chair. Yes, there is a difference. Ours are all levies because mine is metro. I can't speak really well to the outstate portion of it because that's a little bit that's handled a little bit differently. One of the reasons that watersheds are so important outstate is because of the ditching issues. Frankly, the county boards want nothing to do with them, and they become these individual issues.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. All right, members, thank you for being here. Mr. Nelman, thank you for your presentation on education finance. This is one of those areas where I often think the education and the tax committee should meet. We've done that before. We all could use a little bit more information about how the education funding that they work through fits with the property taxes that we look at here in this committee. So thank you for beginning that conversation with us.
Madam Chair, in advance, I'll say my name is Eric Nauman with the Office of Senate Counsel and Research, and apologize for my voice. It's always daunting coming to the tax committee, and I seem to have picked up a bit of a frog along the way. I didn't intend this presentation to be a global presentation on all of the education finance formulas, but rather more of a little bit of a discussion about property tax trends. Unfortunately, when you begin talking about K-12, you have to talk a little bit about the aides. It's worth defining a little bit of terms on the front end. Ms. Cadoon asked that I take a look back at Governor Ventura's big plan, so maybe a little bit of context for that. And then I understand that there's a lot of interest in the operating referendum amongst the committee, so I've got some trend data on that. Of course, Madam Chair, you're completely correct. This committee is the committee of second jurisdiction for the K-12 omnibus bill. That bill is routinely brought to this committee every year as it's processed. Because there are property taxes in the K-12 in the K-12 committee's jurisdiction, so sort of a hand holding between the two committees is inherent in the jurisdictions. But if you'd like to get into more details about the individual formulas, we've got more slides than you can shake a stick at. So we'll just give you the ones that we prepared today. And if you'd like to have an ongoing conversation, I'd be pleased to return.
Great, thank you.
So, and I'll mention at the end, time permitting, I understood that there was some conversation desired about the shifts. I've got about 20 slides on that. We can shorten them up or expand it depending on the committee's pleasure. So when we get to that, please give me some guidance. I think we have until about 10 o'clock. Is that right?
Thank you.
Okay. So jumping in, Dr. McQuay always teases me because I always begin with the Constitution on this. I think it's useful to throw it up every time. Because I think as many people read it, have a different interpretation of what it means. I don't mean that pejoratively towards her, but she teases me because I always bring it up. I think it's useful because it, unlike most other budget areas in state government, we have a recipe for what we're supposed to do in education finance. It references taxes. It references what we're supposed to spend the money on. The courts are littered with all sorts of interpretations about what this state's interpretation of this language means, and most other states have one too, so I'll leave it there for your Hopefully you'll read it when you're trying to fall asleep. In K-12, we talk about revenue as money that districts have available to spend. We talk about levies as dollars, revenue dollars that are collected off the property tax and state aid is money appropriated by the legislature. Many of our formulas have a combination of both of those. Some just have levy, some just have aid. Here's a good rule of thumb when we're talking about those that have a blend, revenue is the sum of both your aid and your levy. So when I use those terms, that's what we're referring to. Members of this committee are well familiar with the various tax bases, adjusted net tax capacity, RMKV. The fiscal year for school districts is the same as it is for the state, beginning on July 1st and ending on June 30th. Equalization is something we'll touch on here. It's that process of attempting to reduce tax burdens based on school districts that have more property wealth per pupil unit. An equalizing factor is that statutorily determined level above which no equalization or no state aid is injected into state formulas. We'll begin with some of the trends, simple stuff. How many school districts do we have in the state? Back in 1998, my first session here was 98, so my data set goes back to that point. 353 school districts. We've had some consolidation since then. 337 is where we stand today. I think of more interest is the growth in charter schools. We had 29 back then. The charter school law began giving us charter schools in the early 90s. In 98, we were at 29, and you can see we're at 148 now. And some of that little reduction is due to some of the changes that occurred in the charter school laws just a couple years back. Enrollment. Most of K-12 is driven by pupil counts. You can see that we're sort of coming out of a little bit of a bell-shaped curve. This is heavily dependent upon two things, economy as well as birth rates. So as birth rates increase, the more kids you get into the system. And we had a little bit of a valley, and we're going to be and the projections are that we'll be coming out of that in the coming years. So these numbers get built into the forecasted numbers that we look at every November. And February, they drive the K-12 expenditures, both on the levy and the aid side. If you drill down and want to look at subcategories, not just total public enrollment, but you want to look at charter schools, non-public schools, and homeschools, we have those data plotted here. You can see the non-publics or the triangles bopping along the top. My suspicion is that we've got a little tail off, probably because of the economy. In recent years, the charter schools, however, are on a pretty healthy growth trend. I would anticipate that to be pretty steady as well, and the homeschools are pretty constant. Are there questions on the enrollment data? Okay. We used to have formulas that are driven directly off of teachers. Now it's primarily we don't. We phased out the last one, but I still think it's instructive to take a look at how many teachers we have. So the top line is the total. The square is the pre-K through elementary school teachers, and then the secondary teachers. And then you can't really tell from that bottom line because it gets squished based on the scale that we're using, but the special ed teachers are on a bit of a growth trend, and I think that's interesting to take a look at.
Mr. Nyman?
Madam Chair.
I'm looking at slide 7 and slide 9. Does this show that enrollment has dropped significantly, but the number of teachers hasn't really changed much at all in the same period of time?
Madam Chair, I'm struggling to get back to that so we're all on the same page. I believe it does. So what you have is a decline in enrollment. Keep in mind the scale here is scrunched from is 855 down to 805. So we've accentuated that trend. We're certainly on a bit of a decline, and then we're projected to grow out of that decline. And the teacher trends are what I displayed. Any And I'm sure that the school districts would be pleased to talk to you about why they believe that that trend is appropriate or not appropriate.
I'm sure they would, but I'm just trying to see if my eyes are seeing right. It looks like we've gone down about 25,000 students and have been resting there for the last 5 years, but the number of teachers hasn't changed hardly at all since 1998. I want to make sure I'm seeing that correctly.
Madam Chair, the data is the data. It speaks for itself.
Thank you, Senator Skoy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, I think that depends somewhat on where the population loss is occurring. And if it's occurring in, you know, your smaller rural schools, you know, you've got one third grade, and whether it has 20 kids or 27 kids, you still need one teacher. So if you're in a larger metropolitan district where you might have some student loss, you probably can readjust your sections in your schools to actually save some staff. But in the smaller schools, it's really hard to reduce staff because of population decline, because you still need a first grade and second grade and sixth grade.
Senator Skoy, I'm sure you're right, but the statewide numbers are the statewide numbers. It might be true in those rural districts. I don't know how it impacts the busier districts or the ones with the higher counts, but certainly they can adjust easier.
I think, Madam Chair, if you look at where the population decline is occurring, and this the redistricting demonstrates that, population decline is occurring in the sparsely populated rural areas, and population is increasing in the more heavily populated area around Minneapolis and St. Paul.
Thank you. Mr. Nowak, go ahead.
So, Madam Chair, that takes us up through slide 9. This next slide begins the discussion. We begin to pull the property tax data in on this slide. I find this to be a interesting slide because it shows some of the policy changes built into the numbers that were made at various points. So the top line is the total revenue that school district had, again, from 98 projected out through fiscal year 2015. The red line is the state aid in the system. So you see that there's a relatively large jump in about fiscal year in exactly 2003. And then a little bit of a decline in the state aid in 2010. And you see on the property tax side, which is that diamond, the blue diamond, there's a corresponding drop in that same fiscal year. I'm not going to get into a lot of detail about the other lines, except to mention that you notice in fiscal 10 there's an increase in the federal aid. And what I'll mention about those two trends is that if you look at the very top line, the overall revenue trend is pretty steady. It's an increase over time. However, in fiscal year 2003 was the implementation of Governor Ventura's big plan. That's when the general education levy was eliminated. So you see an increase in the state aid and a drop in the property tax. There was some increase in revenue that year, but it didn't materially affect the trend. So you're swapping property tax for state aid. And then in 2010 was the federal ERA money coming online. And at that point, we swapped in about $500 million of federal aid to replace state aid to cushion the state over some of the fiscal impacts that were occurring at that time. I think this chart is interesting because it shows those trends. And I thought it was so interesting, I thought I would split it out by percentages. So if you consider that top line to be 100%, what is the composition of revenue over time? So again, in 2003, you see that we moved from a 56% of state aid in the prior year to 74% state aid. And the property tax at that point drops from 25% of the grand total to 12%. Then again, in fiscal year 10, you see that same the same dynamic that I painted earlier in the earlier slide about the federal aid increasing and the state aid going down.
Mr. Nauman, can I ask you about slide number 10? That purple line, that's the other, or that's the total. The purple line with the circles is the total number of dollars in revenue to schools across the state. Is that correct?
Indeed, Madam Chair.
And so if I'm reading that correctly, also the dollars available to schools has increased while the number of students in the schools decreased.
Indeed.
Thank you. Senator Howe.
Yeah, Madam Chair, can you tell me what was the credits and other aids that was 7%, pretty significant in 2002, and then it just went to zero?
Well, it didn't go quite to zero, and we're going to talk about that in a little bit more detail.
Okay,
I think what you're talking about here is you're looking at the yellow line right down there, right? So when we get into some of the composition of what's going on the property tax, we can sort of show some of that. But there was a drop in 2003 because there were some credits against the K-12 against all property taxes that accrued to school districts. And at the same time that we eliminated the general education levy, Senator Howe, we also eliminated those credits. So the total general education levy was valued at $1.3 billion, but there was several hundreds of millions of offsets against that as credits, homestead education credit among them. And those were zeroed out, so you see a drop on that. There's another slide that will show that in more detail.
Thank you.
Madam Chair.
Senator Hoffman.
I want to go back to the slide 9 and follow up on Senator Scoy's question. Is there a way that we could break out where the FTEs are growing? We do have a diverse state, the rural versus the metro suburban. Is there a way we could break that out instead of sort of lumping it all into one pile? It doesn't really show a true picture.
It's a good question. I have to admit, I put this slide in sort of as an afterthought. I didn't realize it would generate this much conversation, but certainly we can get the data in terms of where that's going, and I can certainly provide it to the committee.
Thank you.
Okay, so we're now up to I like to include this slide as we begin talking about aids and levies to illustrate how equalization is intended to work. In Minnesota, we have a collection of formulas, and I've got some examples here in the third bullet, that the intent of the policy is that school districts that have higher property values should not have a disproportionate revenue advantage over school districts that don't have higher revenue value, property value per student. So there's an attempt in several of the K-12 formulas aligning with the Constitution to offset some of those revenue advantages that would exist in a school district that has higher value. So essentially, if you think about this chart as District 1 being the poorest district in the state, and this is very hypothetical, and District 5 and 6 being the wealthier districts per student, that for a given amount of revenue, if you were mentally to draw a line across at, say, $500 per kid, that the school district number 1 would receive, it doesn't actually happen this way, but 100% of that as state aid. Whereas just as the further you move to the right with increasing value, several of our formulas begin to offer a mix of both state aid and levy, and then the further out you go, the wealthier districts per student have to generate that same amount of revenue off of 100% state aid, or levy rather.
Mr. Nauman, is that levy authority? Are we telling the school districts what the authority amount is for their levy?
Well, Madam Chair, it does depend on some of the formulas that we're talking about, but this chart is intended to illustrate the example of how equalization works. What the committee has done in the past is essentially draw that line, the line between the aid and the levy. So where that line rests is the amount of equalization that occurs relative to a school district's property wealth.
And I'm asking the question, and I'm not asking it as clearly as you're answering these questions. The question for me is, are we doing the equalization by adjusting the state aid amount, or are we implementing the equalization by putting a limit or an authorization amount for the schools to levy property tax?
Well, it occurs in we actually do both. In some cases, we'll say a school district may levy X amount of dollars per kid, and that's going to generate different amounts based on the size of the school district and the kids in the school district. In other cases, we will establish a revenue amount and then underneath that decision, make a decision about how much of that we will pay for in state aid and how much of it will be authorized as a levy increase.
And we do that in state statute?
Indeed, Madam Chair.
So we distinguish between different school districts and say these are allowed to levy up to a certain amount per student to complement whatever state aid they get.
I may have twisted it around a little. Let me try to unpack it.
I think I did pretty much.
Well, the operating capital revenue program inside the general education program, this is where we sort of get into some of the detail of K-12 finance, is one of the simpler versions. Essentially, it is a program to help school districts pay for operating costs. So it can be anything from school, from tuck pointing on a building to books. There's a whole variety of things that go into that program. We establish more or less about $200 per kid in every school district in the state. So the revenue itself doesn't vary that much. It is weighted by the age of buildings, but that's kind of immaterial in terms of the overall amount. Then what we do is say we set that line. So we use the property tax value of the district to say how much of that overall revenue will be raised by property tax and how much of it, based on the wealth of the district, will accrue to the district in the form of a state aid appropriation. So it's a blend, and that's operating capital, and I have that listed here. We do the same kind of thing for those other programs, including the operating referendum. I picked operating capital as my illustration because school districts are going to choose different amounts of operating referendum based on local decisions. Does that help?
Yes. Senator Skoy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. Nauman, could you also look at this equalization formula as an effort to have the same school tax levied on a $100,000 home no matter where it is in the state, whether it's in Roseau or Roseville? Because that was part of the thought, I believe, when this was all being discussed, is that no matter where you were in the state, you were going to contribute a comparable amount of property tax towards schools based on the value of your home. And some jurisdictions where you had less other support property tax, you know, you couldn't just burden all of it on those homes. So the equalization formula came in to effect to equalize that tax burden.
Madam Chair and Senator Skoy, I don't disagree with an interpretation that you've made there, but I would look at it more from an education finance perspective aligned with the Constitution, that there's language in there that says thorough and efficient system of public schools for every student throughout the state. So if you take that to its logical extension, and let's say we took away all the aid, the school district that is in the 5 or the 6 area relative to the 1 or 2 area on this chart would have a revenue advantage because of the same rate would generate, the same effort would generate vastly more dollars in the 5 or 6 district relative to the 1 or 2 district. So what the legislature did at the time was say equalization will help offset some of those revenue advantages and more or less impose a rate that's closer to a similar burden in across districts. It's worked imperfectly over time.
Senator Skoy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So given that, and as the state has not readjusted its formula since the early 90s, and I don't know if you're planning on talking about that or not, and if you are, I'll wait.
I was.
You were. I'll wait.
Well, Mr. Nauman, I'm not sure we're going to have enough time to finish today. I don't know whether you're available and committee members would like to stay, but I definitely think we should continue this conversation, members. I hope you think it's useful. Well, just one moment, Senator, to that, or I was going
to
ask.
Well, to that point,
yeah,
Madam Chair, because I have to go too, and I think the committee's probably going to. This sheet matters. I mean, this really matters, and you don't have to look too deep and to see where the problem is. As we've starved schools over the last 10 years, school districts become more dependent on property taxes. It's all here. See the trend line. You can see what the impact of eliminating the market value homestead credit is, how that's going to impact school levies next year. It's all here. I'm not sure I would encourage the committee to spend some more time looking at this tracking sheet and the trend line, because we're all concerned about increasing property taxes, and the legislature over the last decade has been driving those property taxes by inadequately funding our K-12 system and reporting it. It's just all in the numbers.
Well, Senator Bach, I think that's the purpose of this meeting, is to figure that out, to start to understand better what the impact of our policies have been. Mr. Nauman, I wanted to follow up on what Senator Skoy said. If the purpose of equalization was to make sure that folks in a home that was valued at $100,000 in one district had the same kind of burden as those with a home valued of $100,000 in another district, I'm not sure that's a complete enough goal. And maybe there was more to it than that, and that's my question. Because in my district, I represent the Norwood Young America School District. The superintendent was here to see me yesterday, Brian Corlett. They have very different challenges in that community than on the other side of my district, which is the Minnetonka School District. And so is the equalization, I guess I'm getting at, is intended to equalize the dollar amount that the residents in Norwood Young America pay for schools to the ones in Minnetonka, or their ability to pay? I'm trying to figure out what's the equalization effort.
Sure. Madam Chair, there's a couple of concepts there, and I'll preface it by saying we're talking education finance theory here,
mm-hmm.
not exactly what is happening in a perfect world, because what we have in our system certainly isn't a perfect world. It's a collection of decisions. And when the equalization was instituted, the design was to, in accordance with the language of the Constitution, ensure that a student that happens to be in one district relative to another district, and if you can hold things harmless, the only difference being that one district has more property value per kid, that second student wouldn't get a disproportionately better education as a result of having more property value in that district, because we use property taxes to generate revenue for school districts. So what the state did 20 or so years ago was step in and say, for some of our formulas, we're going to add state aid and to try to offset some of those differences. I guess I would separate a little bit from Senator Skoy in saying it hasn't been my interpretation that the desire was for an individual homeowner to have the same burden, but more to have similar tax efforts across school districts. I don't disagree with that interpretation. That's a fine interpretation, but I don't think that was the ultimate goal. I think it was more in line with the Constitution to ensure that some kids in one district don't have a disproportionate advantage relative to others.
Like, I could somewhat see that maybe one of the goals would be that obviously you want a kid in any school district to get the same valuable education as in any other district. You don't want them to have a lesser quality opportunity at education. I understand that. And then I can see why you might want to adjust the state aid accordingly, because in some districts they have the property tax wealth to raise a levy to provide the funding, and in others they don't have nearly the same opportunity. If that's the goal of equalization, I understand it, but I think there's a lot more to it that we should probably dig into.
Of course.
Is that one of the goals of equalization?
Well, Madam Chair, the goals of equalization we're talking about on a theoretical level. If you ask me the question, what is the goal, I would ask you back the question and say, what is your goal? This committee is the policymakers here. You get to decide. I can look back retrospectively as an analyst and say, here's what I think was attempted to be accomplished when we injected an equalization aid into the system. We now have enough data over time to look at it and say whether we think that makes sense. One of the challenging aspects of dealing with equalization, of course, is that the way it was set into law, and this sort of prefaces some of the slides that I was going to talk about, is we set that line as a hard number, a value per student, and that line hasn't been adjusted. So as property values increase over time, you get less and less equalization. And maybe that's okay. Maybe it's not. I'm not here to value that. I just say that as property grows over time, relative to the school formulas, all school districts tend to look less wealthy. so that the aid, I mean, rather, the reverse. They tend to look wealthier relative to the K-12 formulas, so the aid goes down. If the, and I know there have been bills introduced in the past to index the equalization, equalizing factor for inflation, and maybe that's a question if equalization is something that interests you.
Thank you. Senator Chamberlain.
Yeah, quickly, this is a really interesting discussion. I hope Mr. Nauman comes back. Merging finance and education finance and taxes, quite a mix. But I hesitate to disagree with the Honorable Senator Bach, especially since he's not here. But as was mentioned earlier, the data is the data. And when I look at the data, certainly there are issues and discrepancies and things to be resolved. But certainly, state aid has increased steadily, according to the graphs, the data, over the last many years. And as have Mr. Paulson has stated, no matter what we have done, property taxes, levies, have increased dramatically, exclusions or credits or what have you. So there's a couple things in there. I'll catch up with Mr. Bach later. Mentioned to him. Thank you.
It's been an eye-opening morning. Senator Hoffman, I'm sorry I ignored you before. Not intentional.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think this might be a discussion we can't get in here today, but talking about the equalization formula and what happened 20 years ago, my district and a lot of rural districts have a lot of seasonal rec property, and so that actually raises the property values in a district such as mine. I have numerous school districts that are suffering from this conundrum, and so it raises their property value, but they don't have the ability to get those referendums. Do you understand what I'm saying here? So are we going to have was that part of your discussion, or is that a whole other discussion?
I hadn't intended in getting into that point exactly, but what I can suggest to you is that, sure, there are different schools of thought on how the operating referendum ought to be imposed and what tax base it's imposed upon. That was a critical part of the discussion that led to the ultimate Governor Ventura big plan in 2001, and a new tax base was established at that point. I shouldn't say established, but used for the operating referendum that excluded that from the operating referendum. So indeed, it's a decision.
Madam Chair.
Thank you. Senator Skoy.
Just a quick comment. I think we're wrapping up, but I think this is this committee's issue. The K-12 Finance Committee is never going to care about this, because if you put money in the equalization, it goes to reduce property taxes. We call it education funding, but it doesn't change the dollar amount to the school one iota. It's property tax relief. So this committee is going to have to focus in on equalization and put dollars into it in order to make headway in this.
Senator Skoy, I agree with you completely. I do think it is within our jurisdiction. We might be secondary, but I think it's absolutely important that we do this. And I've always thought that everything should come back to the Tax Committee. if no one has anything else, Mr. Nauman, Ms. Kadoon is going to reach out to you to see when we can schedule part two of this conversation, because I think our members are fascinated and they do want to engage in this conversation some more. Members, with that, we are going to adjourn until next Thursday at 8:30. We are going to talk about the tax expenditure report. We are going to hear from Commissioner Franz. So next Thursday at 8:30, and Ms. Kadoon will work to schedule Mr. Nauman back into our agenda. Thank you so much.
Mm-hmm.
Committee is adjourned.